We know you missed your summer movie fix last week, but many of you may have soothed your feelings in the bracing chill of your local Octoplex, maybe with the latest installment from Hogwarts, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince.
What you are looking at are memories. In this case, pertaining to one individual, Voldemort. Or as it was known then, Tom Riddle.
That's a very literary edition of the TOTN Summer Movie Festival today. What is your favorite movie adaptation of a beloved children's book? Or not so beloved even. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And you can join our conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. And with us, as always, is our favorite film buff, Murray Horwitz. Nice to have you back in the program,
Good
Murray.
To be back.
And let's stipulate no movies from comic books, very dear to my heart, of course, but we'll do those another time. Also, no children's movies made from adult books. Now, that's an interesting take.
Well, it's one of the issues that when you essay this, a genre or just cluster of movies, is Lord of the Rings a children's book? I mean, most of us didn't read it until we were 18,
and certainly on the violence level, rated R.
Exactly,
yeah.
And you know, I've seen there have been a couple of films, at least, including an animated cartoon of Gulliver's Travels, which I don't think is children's literature, you know, but it does make for children's cinema. There's also another ground rule, which is again no TV, which so you know you can't have.
But getting back to that, children's films from adult books. Here's one that's sort of right on the cusp, but a lot of different versions of this book.
John Cooper, present teacher. Ben Donaldson.
Here, teacher.
Huckleberry Finn. Huckleberry Finn. Has anyone seen Huckleberry Finn?
No, not yet.
Several times, in fact, and apparently that scene's stolen completely by Ferris Bueller.
It's true. It is. It's the Ferris. It's the Ben Stein does Mark Twain, right? Huckleberry Finn. When we were growing up, Tom Sawyer was the real children's book,
absolutely,
right? But still, Huckleberry Finn was something that you knew about in elementary school and you didn't understand until you were maybe 45,
maybe not even then.
Not even then.
Those are the stipulations anyway. And now, diversity here is a bit of an issue.
Yeah, I mentioned the issue of you know, what is children's lit, and you know, is it, you know, children's books written for children that get turned into movies? I think in general that's what we're saying. Also, I think we have to say, before we get to the idea of diversity, what are the reasons for there being so many films that have been adapted from children's literature? And it's a formula for success.
Sure.
I mean, people know these stories. They grew up with Grimm fairy tales. They grew up with Mother Goose stuff. So there's a built-in audience. Certainly, Harry Potter's the great example. But you're right. Most of the...
A bit of a reverse. In the old days, it was the parents. I read this book when I was a kid, so I'm going to take my kids to see the movie. Now it's the kids dragging their parents.
This is what we call the eat your spinach approach. Approach to children's cinema. Watch this, it'll be good for you. But there really is a problem and a question of diversity. It's a really interesting piece, I think, of social history. There are, unhappily, I would argue, children's adaptations of film adaptations of Little Black Sambo. Mm-hmm. There was a very big and famous and well done, clearly racist movie by the Disney studios
called Song of the South,
yeah, which were the folk tales collected by Joel Chandler Harris. But now, you know, and now there are things like there are adaptations of Anansi the Spider, but that's an African tale. There is some African-American stuff, Sounder, which is a wonderful movie, mm-hmm, that's adapted from a book by William H. Armstrong. The Wiz is a black version of The Wizard of Oz. But if you think of the great wealth of Asian and South American and Spanish and Portuguese literature, Middle Eastern, I mean, you know, there's Aladdin and the Arabian
Sinbad
Nights.
Sinbad, and yeah.
As we can look forward, I think, to in the next 50 years, a golden age of diversity in children's cinema.
Let's get some callers in on the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Let's start with Krista in Chapel Hill.
Hi, I love your program.
Oh, thank you.
I just wanted to say to your guest that I really appreciate his comment about the golden age in children's books coming up. I really feel that way, too. There's so many great books on the market right now. There's Shannon Hale's up-and-coming series. Evie Baker has some great series out that I think will be really interesting with film in the future. I remember reading a quote by famous author Madeline L'Engle with the Wrinkle in Time series where she said she didn't start out to be a children's writer. She just wrote books, and when she discovered adults couldn't understand them, she marketed them for children.
All right, what's your favorite one now, Krista?
Oh, what is my favorite one of Madeline L'Engle?
No, your favorite
film adaptation.
Film adaptation.
Oh, absolutely. absolutely. So far, it's C.S. Lewis's book, but his famous Narnia series, but I think that's only because of the budget. I find that with a lot of the series, Madeline Lingle's, of course, The Ring of Endless Light, they just tried to revise Susan Cooper's The Dark is Rising series of a couple of years ago, and that was a disaster. I think the problem is when you purge a lot of the orthodoxy and the sort of didacticism out of these books, you end up making them a little more simplistic than they were meant to be.
Well,
so we end up getting them a little bit more sort of mystical, paganistic, and we lose some of the more structural elements of the storyline.
Well, Narnia, of course, an allegory of religious basis,
right,
and a battle between good and evil.
They come, Your Highness, in numbers and weapons far greater than our own.
Numbers do not win a battle.
No.
I bet they help.
That a quote from Joseph Stalin, of course. Krista, thanks very much for the
Papa
call.
Papa Joe, as he was known. But Krista does mention series, and there are all kinds of, I mean, Harry Potter is obviously true, the Chronicles of Narnia and The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and Prince Caspian, Dr. Doolittle books, there, and of course, The Wizard of Oz.
Dr. Doolittle was a terrible movie, twice!
Well, I like the score.
Am I right? All right, all right, all right.
Talk to the animals.
Well, let's get Andrea on the line from Wichita.
Hi.
Go ahead, Andrea.
Hi. My favorite would probably be Willy Wonka.
Willy?
Any Roald Dahl children's novel that's been made into a movie actually is pretty good.
And not unlike the Narnia books, and indeed a lot of these, that aspect of darkness in these books really is what makes them very appealing, Murray.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you can be an adult and read those, and they're still so good.
Isn't it true that the best, maybe we're on to something here, thanks to our callers, isn't it true that the best children's books do have a kind of hard edge to them, or as you say, a darkness or a bleak, something that
to scare the bejesus out of you at some point.
Or to give them a dose of reality. I mean, if it's all, you know, puffy and hearts and flowers and, you know, that doesn't have quite the same staying power as something that tells us about how rough life can be.
This bulletin just handed me. The New York Times is reporting that Dr. Seuss book The Lorax is being made into a movie for probable release in 2012.
Do I know The Lorax? I think there's probably a thorax rhyme in there somewhere. But
I'm sure. No, I do know The Lorax. But anyway, Andrea, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And that, of course, we've got the other movie out, Where the Wild Things Are, coming in, October, I think.
Right. And this is a Marie Sendak thing that is, it's interesting. There's, you would think that, and you would be right, that picture books, things that are not particularly, I'm going to get in trouble with this, literary, in that there's a lot of text, but there are a lot of pictures, would lend themselves to motion picture treatments. And they have, you know, The Three Little Pigs and Jumanji and even Shrek. And you mentioned Dr. Seuss, The Cat in the Hat, and Polar Express. There are a bunch of picture books that have made it into one.
Polar Express was not so much
a nice pictures.
Nice pictures. Yeah, let's go to Lauren. Lauren with us from Golden, Colorado.
Hi.
Hi, you there. Go ahead.
I wanted to say that I loved Coraline.
Coraline in 3D.
I loved the movie. It was completely fantastic.
That's the Neil Gaiman book, of course, and adapted for screen and just out, this past year?
Yes, it was really good. And even in 3D, it was really cool.
All right, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Here's an email we have from Rebecca in St. Louis. From the scenes of the English Moors to the music, the growth of the characters Mary and Colin in the 1993 version of The Secret Garden, it still brings me joy, especially now that I am an adult.
There have been a couple of versions of The Secret Garden, and again, this is one I think that we can say has a little hard edge of reality to it, a little bit of pain, and that makes it stick in the memory.
Let's see if we can go next to Natasha. Natasha with us from Manchester in Connecticut.
Hi there. That's kind of funny because I was going to say the exact same 1993 version of The Secret Garden. I thought they really captured when it starts in India. There's the score is so beautiful, and they really captured that desolate, lonely feeling. And then when she gets up to the moors, it's a different kind of loneliness, and it's very cold and gloomy. And I was very happy when I saw as a girl how well they stuck to the story from the book.
I agree, Natasha, and I said Natasha, I should have said Natasha. And I think that's one of the strengths of this whole area of film, because you're allowed, because it's kids, to do something a little bit more magical, a little bit more imaginative, and filmmakers love that kind of, a little moodier, you mentioned the kind of tone of it, and filmmakers love that freedom.
Natasha, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
And, of course, there are straight-out adventure stories as well, including William Goldman's Princess Bride, which is, of course, a melange of many genres. But here, some great acting in this. Wallace Shawn accepting, well, a challenge.
I can't compete with you physically, and you're no match for my brains.
You're that smart.
Let me put it this way. Have you ever heard of Plato, Aristotle, Socrates?
Yes.
Morons.
Really? In that case, I challenge you to a battle of wits.
For the princess? To the death? I accept.
Which immediately pursues Cary Elwes there in the role.
It's a wonderful Rob Reiner film, as I recall, and really, really well done. And there's another one where there's a kind of magical air. And even if it's a realistic story, there is something. That we think of horse films like National Velvet, but there's that wonderful film. I think of it as a Mickey Rooney film. He's not the star, and that's The Black Stallion. And there's just it's a Francis Ford Coppola film, and there's just wonderful moodiness and tone in it. It's a great movie.
You've happened to have picked my particular favorite children's movie there, and which adaptation from children loved the books and also love this particular movie. And of course, it begins the Walter Farley books. That it begins the movie with Alex's father. They're on the ship. It's about to get shipwrecked, but I don't want to give it away. But
right. Hoyt Axton,
and he's reading Alex a story about a famous horse named Bucephalus and the king of Macedon who wanted to kill him because, well, nobody could ride this horse.
Just then a voice called out from the edge of the crowd. Is it? I can ride that horse. Everybody looked around. They said, who said that? Looked over and it was a little kid just about your size, just about your age.
That was Mickey Rooney. No, it was Alexander the Great. We're talking about children's books adapted to the movies with our movie maven Murray Horowitz. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. Let's go to Andrew. Andrew with us from Cleveland.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking the call. Golden Compass was one of my favorite adaptations, and I was so sad to see it not as well received because it canceled out the hopes for the next two books to be filmed, and it's not unlike many sequels with dark edges. The second book is the strongest of the series.
I'm sure that the producers of the film agreed with you. I'm sure they thought this was a franchise. These books are enormously popular. People get, you should forgive the joke, religious about these books and the Philip Pullman Golden Compass series, and why it didn't hit, I don't know.
Okay. Andrew, thanks very much.
No problem, Neil.
Let's go through a couple of emails quickly. Phantom Tollbooth, this from Becky in Des Moines. I'd like to nominate this as one of the best movie adaptations. Ever After Cinderella, loved it, writes Karen in Tucson, Arizona. And let's see if we can go to Suzanne in Davis, California. As a little girl, I loved to read books by Roald Dahl over and over again to this day. The film adaptation of The Witches still brings back memories of how scared I was of the movie as a child. Those square toes are terrifying. She's absolutely right. Sounder is a great movie sent from Keith. And this from Sherman. City of Ember was a good movie, which made me read the book and its larger series. However, I think the movie bombed at the box office and no sequels are planned. Don't you hate it when that happens? Let's get another caller in. This is Leslie. Leslie calling us from Kansas City.
Yes, hi. Thanks for letting me on.
Go ahead.
I think you might be remiss in saying that most children's movies from adaptations actually are very bad. I mean, consider The Grinch. How the Grinch Stole Christmas?
Well, the animated version with Boris Karloff was pretty good, but
that's what I mean.
That's the TV show.
I couldn't bear to go to the. I think it was Ron Howard that did it because they throw too much in it. Special effects, you know, just potty jokes. I mean, it takes an intelligent person to put something like that to screen.
Right. You had no dearth of intelligent people. It's just things often go wrong. And
that's who they're marketing it to, though.
Yeah.
And The Cat in the Hat was no better.
I'm sorry?
The Cat in the Hat
was
no better.
No, that was even worse. I couldn't even watch the previews. I mean, I think they underestimate the ability of a child to enjoy a good story.
Well, also, you bring up a really good point, I think, Leslie, because these are live-action films made from cartoons or from picture books. And a couple of our correspondents, Becky and Karen, mentioned Pinocchio, Cinderella, and it took them to bring up the fact that some of the best children's adaptations of children's literature have been animated.
Yeah.
I don't think any of us would have known that Italian tale if it hadn't been for about Geppetto and the Wooden Boy, if it hadn't been for Walt Disney.
That's right.
And
that's
right. Of course, this is the story of the craftsman, the puppet
Geppetto,
maker,
yeah.
Geppetto. And of course, we all learned about this from Disney.
I can move. I can talk. I can walk.
Yes, Pinocchio. I've given you life.
Why?
Because tonight, Geppetto wished for a real boy.
Am I a real boy?
Ah, Jiminy Cricket stole the picture.
He had the better song.
Finally, Murray, we have to ask, what is your favorite of all time?
Oh, God, this is such a tired, flat-footed, but I would like to argue unassailable choice. This is L. Frank Baum's The Wizard of Oz.
That's the first picture that made me wonder, what does the L stand for? And, of course, this is, the eternal story with however many great people, but among them, the fabulous Judy Garland.
Yes, I'm ready now.
Then close your eyes and tap your heels together 3 times. And think to yourself, there's no place like home. There's no place like home.
There's no place like home.
Murray's tapping his heels together 3 times or maybe just preparing to get on the
red line. Here.
Thank you very much, Murray, as always.
Thank you, Neil. A real pleasure. Thanks.
Murray will be back next week for the most delicious movies in honor of the upcoming Julie and Julia. We'll be picking our favorite movies about food. If you'd like to get in an early nomination, just put Movie Festival in the subject line and email us talk@npr.org. Tomorrow, it's Science Friday, and Ira Flatow will be here. I'll be back on Monday. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Cummins in Washington.